Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Fiat Rock and Roll. Today, I'm your host, Stefan Grassmann, and we want to talk about the US influence on the regulatory environment for all things digital asset and digital money. Our guest today is Hagen Weiss from Dentons. Welcome, Hagen.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Hagen, please tell us about your professional history and relationships towards blockchain and digital assets before we dive deeper into the topics.
Absolutely. First contact with crypto was actually when I was going to law school, when I got my hands on the Bitcoin white paper. And I was kind of fascinated about the peer-to-peer idea behind it, because believe it or not, there's lawyers out there that go to law school because they're obsessed with justice. And I really like that idea about equality and the network idea and the systematic response that the author of the white paper was offering. So that was the first contact I had with Bitcoin per se. And then I made my journey sort of through the ranks. I did join BaFin almost 10 years ago. When I first got, again, into contact with crypto, I was basically in charge of deciding whether or not certain crypto assets would qualify as financial instruments, as securities under the conventional financial market statutes. And then I was sort of drafted for the BMF, the Federal Ministry of Finance, to write Germany's first Electronic Securities Act for electronic financial instruments / securities. And I also got to negotiate MiCA in the DLT pilot regime, and then worked a little bit for the jurisdiction of the Federal Chancery. After that, I decided I want to work in crypto forever and exclusively, and that's why I joined private practice again. And now I'm, like you said, a lawyer based out of Frankfurt for Dentons. I'm also a Dentons head of corporate blockchain. So basically, I'm in charge of anything digital assets in Germany.
So you're a deep, deep expert in the topics we usually handle here in the podcast. And without revealing too many details, but what are the key aspects you consult these days for these innovative clients you have?
It kind of runs the gamut. We have the more traditional side. Those are financial institutions that have their licenses already in place. And now they are trying to offer more services for their respective clients, meaning they will get the respective licenses under MiCA, for instance. And then we have the more, let's just say, trailblazing / cutting edge projects, DeFi applications, you know, sort of projects that are trying to determine how would they fall under the MiCA umbrella, how could they develop products that are compliant with the applicable framework and statutes, but at the same time, how can they deliver maximum value for their clients? So it kind of like runs the entire like spectrum of classic financial institutions all the way to, you know, hardcore DeFi project.
That's very interesting, and that makes you somewhat unique. Today, we want to talk about the new US regulations getting into place, driven by the new US administration. And who could be better suited than someone like you, who's working in a very internationally set up lawyers company. So let's switch gears a bit and talk about the current developments in the US. And I would like to start with stablecoins. With the new administration in place, it seems like stablecoins are seen as a vehicle to strengthen the US dollar as a global currency. Do you agree to that take?
Yes, I actually do. From a geopolitical angle, yes, definitely. From the economical side as well, the Trump administration has probably a sort of a different type of agenda when it comes to the value of the dollar for like broader and general economic reasons. But when it comes to stablecoins per se, they're definitely using that as a tool to strengthen American dominance and American importance in the entire digital sector. And you can clearly see that by, obviously, statements from Trump himself, from the Trump administration on a broader scale, as well as the actual executive orders that they've drafted so far. And there's already like pending legislation in the US Congress, for instance. And now there seems to be some kind of traction. The momentum seems to be gaining. So we'll definitely see the strengthening of the dollar as some sort of digital park.
Okay. And one of the new aspects is this Genius Act they are talking about. Have you looked deeper into that? And how would that compare to Europe's MiCA?
And that's an excellent question, because it is pretty comparable to MiCA, at least certain parts, certain aspects of MiCA. That is actually, I believe, one or three pending proposals in the US Congress right now. The Genius Act itself was drafted by Senator Hagerty And it has certain parts that focus heavily on stablecoins, obviously. The first part is defining stablecoins as digital assets that are tied to the US dollar. So that also sort of ties to your first question. Then there's another part that deals with amending existing legislation that would exclude stablecoins from the definition of securities, because there's obviously a lot of harm that was done in the past when it comes to crypto and the definition, somewhat outdated definition of securities as investment contracts, a very old test, how we test it, we've all heard about. And there's a third part when it comes to applying the Fed's rules to issuers with assets that are actually exceeding $10 billion, and I believe also applying state regulations for those below that threshold that we just talked about. And last but not least, there's also a part that deals with recognizing stablecoins' utility for financial inclusion, streamlined transactions, and supporting the dominance of the US dollar. Who would have guessed it?
Great. And how do you see the geopolitical consequences from these developments? So the US seems to lean in heavily on the stablecoin aspects, quite different to the rest of the world, I would say. What would that mean on a geopolitical angle?
I think they're definitely leaning into crypto and towards crypto on a broader scale and in general, but especially when it comes to stablecoins, when it comes to actual payment transactions. Now, whether or not that's a good thing, that, you know, the determination if that's use or misuse always lies in the eye of the beholder. But what we're seeing pretty clearly here is dollarization. You can also see that, well, the strategic Bitcoin reserve that was announced and is apparently in the process of getting created. So that's a political instrument that is being wielded by the Trump administration, and they are definitely leaning into that. And that's one part. But the other part is definitely they're playing catch up to a certain extent, because the U.S. has recognized the fact that there's other jurisdictions around the globe that already have statutes in place. In Europe, obviously, MiCA, DLT pilot regime up to a certain extent, national statutes, and then parts of Asia, of course, are very like ahead of the curve. So up to a certain extent, they're trying to like level a playing field here too.
Okay. But when we look at the reaction from the Europeans, then we saw this talk by Piero Cipollone, who reacted with a stronger push for retail and wholesale CBDC as a reaction to the stablecoin agenda from the US. Do you think this is a proper reaction? Do you think this is enough? Or might we also need to watch closely and maybe create a MiCA V2 to even improve our stance towards stablecoins? How do you see that?
Okay, yeah. 2 points here. The first thing is, yes, definitely the talk about CBDCs here in Europe, especially the digital euro, obviously, has gained traction after being dormant for like almost 12 months now. Is that a good thing? Depends whether or not you're like a fan of free markets. The fact of the matter remains, though, the traditional industry, the real economy, needs the functions that can either be performed by stablecoins or CBDCs. Now, is that a good reaction, seeing that the US is leaning heavily towards stablecoins and now we're kind of creating a CBDC, which is obviously a government's answer to that? Again, depends on what kind of political stance you might have or which kind of economical theory you're like leaning towards. But there's definitely like differences between obviously stablecoins and CBDCs that play out on a geopolitical level. And I do think that we shouldn't feel too rushed towards maybe creating things like the digital euro per se, or worse yet, MiCA 2.0, no one needs that at the current stage. We do see MiCA 1.0, or like the first version of MiCA, obviously, that we already have. There are so many parts that haven't been completely researched, that haven't been completely looked at in depth, because there's NCAs that haven't even developed their administrative practices completely, which is perfectly fine because MiCA hasn't been around for that long. There are certain level 2 acts that haven't even passed the parliament or the European part of things. So there's things playing out that pertain to MiCA itself. So it would be kind of a haste to talk about MiCA 2 right now. What we could do is actually look at parts of MiCA that haven't pretty played out the way we wanted them to, and improve them. But Mika 2.0 is definitely, that's too soon.
Which parts of Mika do you see critically from your point of view?
Definitely the entire stablecoin topic, the fact that you have the prohibition of interest when it comes to certain types of stablecoins, obviously, that is putting us at a disadvantage when it comes to the global scale, when it comes to the global level of things, because there's already projects in other parts of the world, the genie is out of the bottle when it comes to yield-bearing stablecoins, for instance. And I do understand that in order to create market stability and also investor protection, the initial thought to prohibit interest was a good one. But now we actually have to change with the situation, because the situation is very fluid right now. And we have to make damn sure, pardon my French here, that we're not being squeezed by both the US and other parts of the world, because we have a stablecoin regime in Mika that is simply too strict, that is just doing nothing other than like sort of stopping us from developing our entire potential.
Agree. So we see in the Middle East, we see stablecoins like the Lyft dollar, who is already yield bearing. And it's easy to imagine that we see some kind of a stablecoin regulation race for the most attractive stablecoin, which then reflects into the currency itself. Do you agree on that point, that we need to watch what's happening out there? I don't want to judge it if that's good or bad, but I think this will heavily affect how successful you can be with a stablecoin. Isn't it that way?
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me personally, and also from a technical / legal level, we should probably open the floodgates and look very, very heavily at other projects out there, especially other jurisdictions that are quote unquote more innovative than we are right now. The cautious approach right now is simply doesn't work out. I don't have to mention all of the geopolitical developments that are happening right now, not just in the financial area, of course, but also in certain other parts of the world that are very close to us, geographically speaking. So we cannot really afford to have too much time when it comes to sort of developing or researching topics. We need to have a bold approach here. And what will definitely not help is being too granular.
How do you see our European neighbors in Switzerland or UK behaving concerning stablecoin regulation? Do they push that more heavily, or are they even stricter?
I think up to a certain point, they're probably stricter. What surprises me quite a bit is that the UK seems to be taking its sweet time toward developing more like a sort of broader digital assets framework. And in Switzerland, there is apparently more of a situation that is gaining traction. Where right now, when it comes to stablecoins, there's a few projects that have popped up as of recently. But I'm somewhat surprised that both Switzerland and the UK, that have been traditionally very business friendly and have been somewhat open to innovation and to innovative approaches in general, are not, as of right now, the front runners when it comes to the framework.
Maybe back to the yield-bearing aspect. From my point of view, there's a strong relationship between stable coins and tokenized money market funds who bear yield. And if done right, you can technically very, very easily switch from a stable coin into a money market fund when it's tokenized on the same chain, for example. Wouldn't that actually maybe solve the problem of the yield-bearing stable coin, that you say, okay, stablecoin is just money in transit, and as soon as it settles down, we just switch it into a tokenized money market fund? Couldn't that solve the problem?
That is definitely a thought that's worthwhile exploring, especially when you look at the underlying tech, public blockchains in general. It could be a good argument to explore that. The fact of the matter remains, though, when it comes to tokenized money market funds or money market funds in general, they were actually created as mutual funds to escape something which is called Regulation Q, that's a rule of the Federal Reserve that was prohibiting banks from paying interest on deposits and checking accounts, and it's actually from the 1930s. So you see, the problem is not something new technically pertaining to crypto, but it has been around for quite some time. And that's why I'm sort of hesitant to like give you a clear answer on that, because there's sort of simply no clear answer, but it definitely needs to be researched or talked about more. It could be a potential solution to that issue if you just treat them that way. Yep.
On the other hand, there are not so many money market funds denominated in euros, so we not only miss a good euro stable coin that is vastly used, but also the money market funds are not there yet. So this idea might even put us into a disadvantage.
That's a good point.
Maybe switching from stable coins to reactions of US banks. Seems like the wind for large US banks is also changing, and they are now allowed to offer custody services for crypto. How do you judge these developments?
Definitely positive for US banks, for the entire crypto industry that's headquartered in the US, or at least has like sort of an American leg. When it comes to that, it also is a clear signal that the Biden administration stance towards crypto is definitely over through voices out there in the crypto space. They were calling it Operation Chokepoint 2.0. When it comes to the Biden's administration's idea for crypto, they were trying to like debank crypto even. So that's definitely positive development for banks domiciled in the US. On the other hand, we're not seeing a super comprehensive legislative idea right now. So we see President Trump obviously issuing executive order after executive order, but whether or not that will play out positively in the end for US banks will really heavily depend on how the SEC and other banking regulators will act towards the bank's crypto efforts. So that remains to be seen.
Okay. Because when you listen to the crypto scene, many are afraid of Coinbase's role, especially when custodying Bitcoin for all the ETFs. So as far as I understand, most of the Bitcoin that's residing in the ETFs, so as collateral in the ETFs, is held by Coinbase these days. And now State Street, BNY, Citi, Bank of America, they all seem to move into this field, open themselves up or prepare themselves for custody services. Would that even be good for the crypto base itself, that Bitcoin is not so much dependent on Coinbase doing everything right?
It's almost a systems theory kind of perspective that you have to utilize here to answer that question. And because from that perspective, the more actors in any given system, the better it usually is. So again, that's a systems theory approach. And that will lead to the fact that, yes, if there's more custodians or more people in the space of custody per se, that would definitely, due to that decentralization effort, lead to reduced risk. I mean, we're also talking about collaboration here. There's the most interesting things happening the second you allow people to collaborate.
Absolutely. In the end, it's quite funny that we now discuss how much Bitcoin is depending on institutional players. I think that was not the intended use in the beginning. But as soon as institutionals pick up and find this cryptocurrency useful, you see where this takes us. It's a very interesting development, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Maybe let's switch a bit to DeFi. I know one of your most interesting topics that you're very passionate about. With new people at the head of SEC and CFTC, we also see a very different picture in that regard regarding regulation, or what we expect to be coming along. Which new levels of freedom to design tokenomics do you expect from these much more crypto-friendly regulatory bodies now?
I do see quite an increased level of freedom in general for crypto projects. If you look at the SEC or the potential new chair of the SEC, Paul Atkins, that person is obviously two things. He seems to be a crypto fan, a Bitcoin fan specifically, and his past actions have seen him or showed him to be very pragmatic when it comes to regulation. So that might be just the kind of ecosystem or just the kind of environment that you need as a crypto project, both from the institutional side and the startups or scale-up side. They will be very pragmatic when it comes to that, is my guess right now, especially combined with the fact that they're completely changing their stance from enforcement by litigation, as opposed to we're going to have regulation by legislation. And what we've seen in the past in the States was regulation by enforcement, as it is also called. They were basically suing a bunch of crypto projects and trying to use the court system, the judicial system, the justice system to sort of create the rule or the rules, which is even more important in the US because we obviously have the common law system there, meaning they are heavily dependent on precedents, on past court cases that will over time create a clearer picture So that will change probably. They also apparently dropped their appellate decision against Ripple when it comes to the SEC. So that is definitely an interesting thought to have right now. We're going to see more freedom for any kind of crypto project.
I always had the feeling that many DeFi projects, like, for example, Uniswap, had been very, very cautious to put more utility on their governance token, in this case, Uni. So there were long-time speculations that token holders might get a share of trading fees or stuff like that. Do you expect any improvement in that regard, that holding a token is really creating this stakeholder economy? So 2 or 3 years ago, everybody was fantasizing about from the shareholder economy to the stakeholder economy. Is there now more chance for us that this vision might come true? And how long do you expect this regulation to take to come up with smart rules regarding that?
The chances have definitely improved when it comes to that. There's a few angles to that. There's a few aspects when it comes to governance tokens. Obviously, right now we do have this fear in the market that whenever you design your governance tokens, and depending on what kind of utility you put on them, you might make them look to resemble financial instruments, in this case, securities. You might make them too similar to those instruments, and that has a lot to do with, like I said, the outdated tests that the US has been somewhat dependent on, the Howey test, for instance, or other parts of that general and broader determination. What a security is, they call it investment contract as a subcategory of that Howey test, family resemblance test, Lambert Timber as a court case, for instance. So it's pretty problematic because you could very easily become a security under those outdated tests. And it's the same thing here in Germany, for instance, when the regulator first came up with an answer or a possible answer to what those crypto assets could be, they determined a three-pronged test, whether or not it should be a traditional or should be considered to be a traditional security just in digital form. And I helped develop that test. So that is sort of on a poor part of the reason why we have a sort of difficult situation for governance tokens. Because if it looks like a financial instrument, then the regulator, regardless of any jurisdictions or in which jurisdiction they might be in, would not hesitate to probably err on the side of caution and be like, this is a security. So that's the problem. And next point is even modern statutes, for instance, MiCA, haven't really cleared up the issue completely, because if you look at governance tokens under MiCA, my take on this would be most governance tokens would probably be or should probably be utility tokens. So no actual financial instruments outside of MiCA, obviously no stable coins. It should be other crypto assets or just general crypto assets, utility tokens. But that isn't completely clear. There's ample evidence and there's research articles and legal commentaries that deal with that question. So we need to clarify that here. And that was a long answer to your question, but that hopefully answers why that we haven't really seen the transition towards that stakeholder economy, because the lack of regulatory clarity probably prevents that.
Absolutely. The funny thing is that since the new administration is in place, all these DeFi tokens are going heavily down. Yeah. So on the one hand side, you see these positive outlooks that actually this new regulation should be somewhat positive for these tokens. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they completely lost in value, which I find very, very surprising. How's your take on that?
Same. I think that also deals with the lack of regulatory clarity and maybe with the lack of incentives right now, because you don't want to be a first mover in that kind of like fast changing environment. That might be a part of it. Fear is never good for markets. You will definitely see reactions that you don't want to see. So I think that the fact that no one has a clear picture as of right now will definitely or is contributing to that.
Maybe last one in that category, Americans were also always very unhappy about being excluded for airdrops from these projects. How do you judge that? Do you think that this will change over time, or is this just speculation? I think we might need to wait what the new administration is coming up with regulations, but I think there is room for hope after all the meme coin craziness done by Trump himself, that he might also be very positive towards airdrops.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, airdrops have seen sort of a revival lately. The fact that Americans have been excluded from most parts of it is also connected to general financial market regulation. Everybody who's ever tried to, like, let's say, log on to some financial institution's website will usually get a question, which jurisdiction are you headquartered in? Are you a U.S. citizen, for instance? So that's a problem that also exists in the conventional space. But we might see let's just say, an improvement there too, because obviously parts of the administration are heavily connected to that sort of issue and would probably benefit from a clear up here.
Absolutely. Maybe coming back to your daily work and your clients, do you already see any consequences from your clients through these developments? Are the U.S. clients now demanding more support from your end? Are they reacting, or are they still hesitant and want to see what's actually baked into U.S. law?
Excellent question. From what we can see, there has been an uptick in interest in any kind of project that has a U.S. angle to it. And our colleagues in the U.S. or in Canada too, up to a certain extent, are seeing renewed interest in that up to let's say November, December, January. You could definitely see some kind of movement from U.S.-based projects that were very interested in the entire MECA situation. They wanted to be under the MECA umbrella, but that has sort of changed right now, and it also highlights the geopolitical aspects of crypto. So all of a sudden, crypto is extremely international. It always has been, obviously, for a multitude of reasons, but now, actually, as Europe, as Germany, we do have to fight against other jurisdictions because there are like viable alternatives that are presenting themselves right now.
Very interesting. And how do you see European players who play international games? How do you see them reacting? Do they now considering going to the US market or still hesitating?
Depends a bit which part of the European players we're talking about. The financial institutions of Europe and in Germany, they obviously have their operations here for the most part. So it would be somewhat difficult to basically pack up and leave unless they already have, like in the US, for instance, they already have US-based operations. But we see positive reactions because two things. A, the US, whatever happens in the US, is also heavily influencing other parts of the world, including Europe. When it comes to the depth of capital markets, for instance, that's not necessarily a secret. At the same time, there is a renewed interest also in the financial or the conventional financial institution side to sort of see what's happening in the US. And we might see the movement of projects towards the Atlantic and basically setting up operations in the US, depending on how friendly they will be in the end.
Maybe getting back to the regulators of this world in the rest of the world. We touched upon that briefly previously, but maybe going back to that, what would you expect? How should other regulators react to these developments? Just wait and see what's in the end put into law, or is there room for movement or need for movement already now?
Two points that should ideally happen at the same time. The first thing is, yes, wait and see up to a certain extent, because you can also benefit from your opponent's mistakes. That's what's happening in the US right now. If you look at past ideas and drafts of crypto legislative statutes, they basically took a lot of pages out of the MECA playbook and sometimes included DeFi, sometimes made it better for the crypto industry. So we can now try to do the same thing, maybe let other people, other jurisdictions make the first mistakes, and we can learn from their mistakes. Definitely one thing. The other point, though, is, and I would really like focus on that, is granularity when it comes to regulation is not always a winning topic and a winning strategy. I've just finished my PhD, for instance, and as it turns out, I've done that over multiple years now, and I've looked at almost every single statute that's available worldwide. And as it turns out, the more granular regulation is, the more hampering it is, or it can be potentially, for a crypto project. So what I would heavily suggest here is we sort of focus on uplifting our own industry here, and that you can do by not being too granular, by realizing, as a regulator, for instance, yes, I have to do my due diligence on projects, and I have to also ask the hard questions, but please do not make it so hard on startups, scale-ups, and established financial institutions to really like develop their crypto operations. And that means finding solutions together. It is not your job as a public servant to prevent business from flourishing. I understand I've been a public servant for quite some time before I joined private practice. And I understand that you also have a duty to uphold financial stability and protect the markets and investors. But at the end of the day, I think we would all benefit from realizing that we also share the same perspective here in Europe, and we need to make projects happening.
Yeah, that's very in line with what I hear from fintech startups. So despite the fact that everybody is happy that Mika sets some guidelines, it's a very obvious secret that it's much easier for bigger players to get along with Mika, and for smaller players with less budgets to spend, it's already quite a hard thing to achieve, isn't it?
It is, because Mika is also a gatekeeper kind of regulation. It puts like a focus on established structures, and up to a certain extent that makes perfect sense, because bigger institutions usually offer more safety for investors, for retail clients, especially, or for other businesses, B2B aspect, for instance. But at the same time, sometimes you have like really cutting edge ideas that come out of the startup niche, out of the startup markets. And since that is kind of problematic to fulfill all the regulatory requirements in Mika and to be compliant, that is sort of dampening prospects for us here. Because again, due to geopolitical events as recently, it is not the time to be cautious. Now it's the time to be bold. And at the same time, we have seen a few startups succeed here in Europe, and that was also due to the fact that we do have financial supervision here in this country that is actually working. So I guess at the end of the day, it's all about balance.
Totally agree. But it's quite hard to get that balance right, isn't it?
It sure is. But again, if we realize that we're basically all sitting in the same boat and that we're all trying to achieve the same thing, we're all human at the end of the day, and you know, we're trying to achieve the same thing because we're all living here on this continent in the same country, then we might find common ground.
Yeah. Maybe one other aspect I want to briefly touch is the Basel requirements we all talked about in the past. So as we all know, they put heavy burden on assets that run on public blockchains. Now with the US admin going strong for stablecoins, which usually run on public infrastructure, do you see an impact on these Basel requirements? Will they come as they were planned, or is there new headwinds for this idea coming from the US?
Yeah, the question is if those proposed changes to Basel are somewhat outdated by the US administration's ideas right now. And as we all know, to quote the famous Yogi Berra, it's kind of hard to make predictions, especially about the future. and that pertains to this situation too. I'm not super, let's say, bullish in terms of things probably getting changed retrospectively, but there's definitely the idea that we might have to change, or we might take into account recent developments. And I think we would all be better off if we don't put a heavy strain on public blockchains for whatever reason, for a multitude of reasons, actually.
Thank you, Hagen. That was quite a journey across stablecoins, DeFi, Bitcoin custody, and other aspects. Did I miss anything that's on your mind? Any other things to add?
Well, thanks for asking. I think we covered quite a few topics. And I think as a last sort of like parting thought here, we all have to remember why it is that we are in the crypto sector. And that goes for new companies. Be assertive, because you have an idea, you have a cutting edge idea. Be assertive when it comes to the idea, but also listen to regulators. Sometimes even listen to your lawyers or your consultants when they're trying to tell you things. And then again, we're like right back to the balance question. And I think we're going to come up with some great like project and a strong crypto industry here in Europe that can succeed in the geopolitical race.
Thank you, Hagen. Maybe last service to our listeners, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they reach you?
Different options. You can look at the Denton's website, for instance. You can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. There's definitely ways to find me.
Okay. So let's close this podcast episode. I thank you very much, Hagen. As always, it was a pleasure having you. Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.